The approach of the 1992 season caused great concern in Messina. The year before, the team had lost 3 games, a civic disaster that had them grumbling over their biscuits at Renfro's and rubber chicken at the Rotary lunches and cheap beer at the Tonks out in the county. And there had been few seniors on that team, always a bad sign. It was a relief when weak players graduated. If Rake felt pressure, he certainly didn't show it. By then, he'd been coaching the Spartans for more than 3 decades and had seen everything. His last state title, number 13, had been in 1987, so the locals were suffering through a 3-year drought. They'd been through worse. They were spoiled and wanted 100 wins in a row, and Rake, after 34 years, didn't care what they wanted. The 92 team had little talent, and everyone knew it. The only star was Randy Yeager, who played corner in wideout, where he caught everything the quarterback could throw near him, which was not very much. In a town the size of Messina, the talent came in cycles. On the upswing, as in 1987, with Neely, Silo, Paul, Alonzo Taylor, and 4 vicious loggers on defense, the scores were lopsided. Rake's greatness, however, was winning with players who were small and slow. He took thin talent and still delivered scores that were lopsided. He worked the lean ones harder, though, and few teams had seen the intensity that Rake brought to the field in August of 1992. After a bad scrimmage on a Saturday afternoon, Rake lashed out at the team and called a Sunday morning practice, something he rarely did because, in years past, it had upset the church folks. 8 o'clock Sunday morning, so that the boys would have time to attend worship if they were able. Rake was particularly upset over what he perceived to be a lack of conditioning, a joke since every Messina team ran sprints by the hundreds. Shorts, shoulder pads, gym shoes, helmets, no contact, just conditioning. It was 89 degrees by 8 o'clock, with thick humidity and a cloudless sky. They stretched and ran a mile around the track just for a warm-up. Every player was soaked with sweat when Rake called for the second mile. Number 2 on the list of dreaded tortures, just behind the Spartan Marathon, was the assault on the bleachers. Every player knew what it meant, and when Rake yelled, "Bleachers," half the team wanted to quit. Following Randy Yeager, their captain, the players formed a long, reluctant single line and began a slow jog around the track. When the line approached the visitor stands, Yeager turned through a gate and started up the bleachers, 20 rows, then along the top rail, then down 20 rows to the next section. 8 sections on the other side, then back on the track, around the end zone to the home side, 50 rows up, along the top rail, 50 rows down, up and down, up and down, up and down, for another 8 sections, then back on the track for another loop. After one grueling round, the linemen were drifting to the rear, and Yeager, who could run forever, was far in front. Rake growled along the track, whistle hanging around his neck, yelling at the stragglers. He loved the sound of 50 players stomping up and down the bleachers. "You guys are not in shape," he said, just loud enough to be heard. "Slowest bunch I've ever seen," he grumbled again, barely audible. Rake was famous for his grumbling, which could always be heard. After the second round, a tackle fell to the grass and began vomiting. The heavier players were moving slower and slower. Scotty Reardon was a sophomore special teams player who weighed in that August at 141 pounds, but, at the time of his autopsy, weighed 129. During the third round of bleachers, he collapsed between the third and fourth rows on the home side and never regained consciousness. Since it was Sunday morning and a no-contact session, both team trainers were absent at Rake's instructions, nor was there an ambulance close by. The boys would describe later how Rake held Scotty's head in his lap while they waited for an eternity to hear a siren. But he was dead in the bleachers, and he was certainly dead when he finally arrived at the hospital. Heat stroke. Paul was telling the story as they walked through the winding, shaded lanes of the Messina Cemetery. In a newer section, on the side of a steep hill, the headstones were smaller, the rows neater. He nodded at one, and Neely knelt down for a look. Randall Scott Reardon, born June 20, 1977, died August 21, 1992. "And they're going to bury him over there?" Neely asked, pointing to a bare spot next to Scotty. "That's the rumor," Paul said. "This place is always good for a rumor." They walked a few steps to a wrought iron bench under a small elm tree, sat, and looked at Scotty's headstone. "Who had the guts to fire him?" Neely asked. "The wrong kid died," Paul said. "Scotty's family had some money, from timber. His uncle, John Reardon, was elected superintendent of education in 89. Very highly regarded, smart as hell, smooth politician, and the only person with the authority to fire Eddie Rake. Fire him he did. The town, as you might guess, was shocked by the news of the death, and as the details came out, there was grumbling about Rake and his methods." "Lucky didn't kill all of us," Neely said.